From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea in for Ed Gordon. Today is the 35th anniversary of Earth Day. And when many people think of Earth Day, they conjure up a stereotypical image of people in the 1970s wearing bell-bottoms and hugging trees. The former head of the Sierra Club even declared environmentalism dead. But in communities of color, there are new environmental leaders and new energy. Today, we asked two very different environmental advocates how they're championing the cause. Jerome Ringo is chair of the board of directors of the National Wildlife Federation. He was elected to that post on April 2nd. Mr. Ringo joins us by phone from Lake Charles, Louisiana. That's about 45 miles from the Gulf of Mexico. Also on the line, Margie Eugene Richard. She led a crusade in her Louisiana neighborhood. In essence, she demanded that Shell Chemical pay her and neighbors to relocate, escaping pollution from Shell facilities. She won that fight several years ago, and today she joins us from Destrehan, located about 25 miles north of New Orleans. We're glad to have you both with us. Now, Ms. Richard, let me start with you. We should mention that last year you became the first African-American to receive the Goldman Environmental Prize. It's considered the Nobel Prize for the environment. How did you feel when you found out?
I was in denial at first, because when you're in a struggle, you're just not looking for an award. So when I got the call, I just said, really? Okay, bye. After knowing that it was really reality, it's like, dear God, this is real.
Let's talk a little bit about exactly what you did. You took on Shell Chemical. You were in a primarily African-American area about 25 miles north of New Orleans. What were some of the problems and illnesses in your community?
Some of the problems in the community were we were at least 25 feet away from the fence line. So the operation, daily operation, the smells of the steam coming out of the pipelines, the flares, constant noises, and misery. It was very difficult to even go in your yard or go anywhere without the daily operation of the plant, and also the people in the community constantly complaining since I was a child about coughing, about aches and pains. And, of course, I experienced it personally when my sister became sick and died from a rare allergenic disease called sarcoidosis, which there's no cure for, only treatable, and yet no specific known cause.
So tell us a little bit about how you got Shell to pay attention. How did you approach them, and how did you even decide to start this fight?
It's kind of strange. This had been the talk of the town since the 70s as a result of an incident that happened on our street, and that was an ethylene pipeline ignited, and there were some casualties from it, and people in the community saw it, all of us, including myself, many years ago, and people were very saddened, and as a public school teacher at that time, I had to counsel a lot of the young children, people who saw the tragedy. And it was trauma in the town. And we became organized years later to address some of these issues. And I believe firmly in the fact that if we don't solve our problems by identifying them and then go straight to the source, and all of those components involved need to come to the table so that there could be communication. And as a result of that, even the elderly in the town met one day without me being there to discuss the issues of the plant. And when I walked in the door, I asked them what was going on there, and they said, oh, we've elected you as president to help with this struggle with Shell. And I could not say no, because it was the same people I'd heard complaining when I was a young girl. There were other young people there. And therefore, we became organized.
So you really were elected by the community. Let me go to Mr. Ringo and then bring you back in a second.
Sure.
Mr. Ringo, congratulations to you. You were elected chair of the board of the directors of the National Wildlife Federation earlier this month. Now, you're the first African-American to hold the post. What will you bring to the table around an issue concerning the environment that is traditionally seen, if I may say it, as a white issue?
Well, my background, I worked in the petrochemical industry and left the industry in 1995. Pardon me, in 1995, when I came to a realization, something I had known for some time, but felt at the time that I could be a part of fixing the problem. I left the industry to work full time on behalf of people outside the fence line. Now that I have an opportunity to serve as the chairman of the largest conservation environmental organization with 4.5 million members, it gives me a much louder voice to speak on behalf of conservation, of people that are adversely impacted, like the people in Destrehan and in Cancer Alley, Louisiana. And I am going to take full advantage of this opportunity to be a beacon for those people, for all people around the country that want to save the environment.
So let's talk a little bit about what is a bit of a difference between the work that you're doing now and the work that Ms. Richard does. There's this whole idea that the environment, a stereotype, that the environment is all about save the whales. And then there's this idea of environmental racism, which is save the people. Are those two goals connected, and how are you connecting them in your work?
Absolutely. As I said, my background is very similar to Ms. Richards down in Destrehan. I have been an organizer in my community in southwest Louisiana, working to help clean up pollution and fight the industries that have caused that pollution, just as she has. The issues of wildlife and saving wild places, as well as cleaning up the air, conservation and environmental protection, whether it be in the neighborhoods of Destrehan or on the halls of Capitol Hill, is all of our responsibility. I believe that building diverse coalitions is critical in achieving true environmental justice. There has to be involvement by everyone in the process. We all breathe the air. We all drink the water. We all should be involved. So therefore, whether you are trying to save the whales or whether you are trying to clean the air, there is a tie-in. What happens, environmental practices on one corner of the earth impacts the entire earth. So there has to be a diverse coalition of people and ideas that come to the table to resolve these issues.
You mentioned federal policy. Let's just talk briefly about it. There's been a lot of attention to the Bush administration's efforts to drill for oil in the Arctic National Wildlife Area.
Yes.
What is your organization's position on that?
Well, of course, we oppose the drilling. Our organization has lobbyists and staff that are working around the clock practically to stop that drilling. And, of course, we were unfortunate that the vote was against us. The Bush administration supports that drilling. We at the National Wildlife Federation believe that there must be new and innovative ideas toward satisfying America's gluttonous appetite for energy. We believe that the answer to the energy problem is not on the slopes of Alaska, but possibly in the factories of Detroit. Automobiles can be made to get better gas mileage. We can consider other alternatives like wind energy. That the demand for drilling in places like Alaska would not happen. So therefore, the National Wildlife Federation strongly opposes drilling in Alaska, impacting the migration patterns of the caribou, impacting the quality of lives of the Gwich'in tribe that live in Arctic Village. One of the members of that tribe is a former board member to the National Wildlife Federation. We have heard the plight of those people. We understand that how it will impact the quality of life of those people.
Let me actually just get Ms. Richard in here. When you are listening to Mr. Ringo talk about these people who are up near the Arctic Circle, do you feel any connection to people who might be thousands of miles from you who are facing a completely different environmental challenge?
That's why I do what I do, and that's why I took a stand for environmental justice, simply because we have a commonality, and that is we are all connected because the foundation of life is air, water, and land. I also believe firmly in the fact that the earth was created for the foundation of life. You can't disconnect them, and everybody plays a part. So one of the most important things for me now is the fact that we must have a change in order to preserve, protect, and not destroy our natural resources. The next thing is industry plays an important part. So when I started out, one of the first things we had to do was bridge the gap between industry, common people, and government. And many changes had to be made, and even today. So my big thing now is if we don't tell them, how will they know? I believe firmly in coming to the table, dealing with issues and facts, face-to-face to discuss problems that existed so long. And because people fail to communicate with all components, then we have mass pollution.
Ms. Richard, we're almost out of time. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just want you to give one final thought, very brief. Mm-hmm. What should someone do if they see the same problems in their neighborhood that you had in yours?
Become organized, speak up, face the person involved face-to-face, and communicate in order to solve the problems. You must communicate to move forward and protect and preserve.
Jerome Ringo, very briefly, same question.
Build diverse coalitions, bring everyone to the table, be a part of organizations that already are involved in such issues, and let's work together to clean up our earth for generations to come.
All right. Jerome Ringo is chair of the board of directors of the National Wildlife Federation, and Margie Eugene Richard is an advocate and recipient of the Goldman Environmental Prize. Thank you both for coming on the program.
Thank you.
You're welcome.